You know damn well I'm gonna find out what's wrong with you. And when I do, I'll be back. Put your life on that.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 16. Why am I talking like this? The Eyes of the Storm. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and me, David T. Cole.
Welcome back, Dave.
Hi.
Listeners may have figured out by now that we usually
Sarah's
record.
Sarah's dead. We miss her.
Sarah has passed.
Whoa, great bunting!
We record two of these at a time, generally. So, Dave, yeah. you have been warmed up by your commentary on episode 15.
Sure.
Are you ready to proceed to episode 16?
Yeah, I still got my... I still don't have the characters' names.
You're
going over the plot. And you ever watch, like, a video that's, like, a couple seconds out of sync with the audio from mm-hmm. it? That was sort of like where my brain was. You say the things. I had mm-hmm. to find out where the characters were in IMDb.
Right.
And then put a face to it. And then I was there. So I was sort of, like, lagging two seconds behind
right.
the whole way. But I feel like I kept up enough.
I think you did.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's coming up on our Patreon. Again with this, episode 101 is dropping June 24th. Let's watch Jenny Garth and Ian Ziering on Name That Tune. They did a celebrity episode of this. The back half of it is Shaggy and Kim Fields. Shaggy, spoiler, does not acquit himself well. But we are going to obviously mostly be focusing on the front half of it, which is our stars, Kelly and Steve. So you can watch their episode, season 2, episode 3, The Good, The Shag, and The 90210 Icons on Hulu. We will link it in the show notes, and you can get that and all of the previous 100 bonus episodes, plus all the Again With Thems if they are at the $5 level, at patreon.com/againwiththis. All right, let's get into The Eyes of the Storm, shall we, Dave?
Yes, let's do it.
First, our B-plot. What to expect when Jake and Allison are expecting, plus Sydney cleans up after Jane. I guess just because of the coincidence of being in the drugstore at the same time as Allison in the last episode, Sam has been bumped up several friend levels and is the one bringing Allison to the doctor's office, where Allison does not seem happy as she climbs in and confirms she is 8 weeks pregnant from the one time she and Jake had unprotected sex at Christmas. Well, that's Utah for you. Sam lectures that she has to tell Jake, but Allison doesn't know what she wants to do yet. And then Sam arrives at the store 2 minutes late to Sydney's name already on the door. Sydney sticking with the naming convention of Melrose Place. Her business is her name, apostrophe S.
Yeah, but why would you? I mean, I realize that we find out that the former name and business wasn't exactly a giant financial success.
Right.
But think about, like, just the branding. People know yep. what it is, and you just, like, change it because now you're the manager or, not, mm-hmm. like, whatever, you're the owner now. It just seemed a little too abrupt, a little too unthought out. You know,
yeah.
perhaps there is some marketing things to consider here.
Yeah. No one who writes for the show has thought about any of these things. Like, if your business is on the skids, which we're about to hear it is, mm-hmm. Do you want to add the expense of, like, changing the registration,
right.
repainting the door, getting new bags printed?
Figuring out a name for right. what this store is going to be right. in this show where everybody's store is their name. By the way, which character is named Shooter?
That's the one that's not, believe no. it or not.
Okay.
Anyway. Sydney's working on the books, complaining about Sam being unreliable, and she is not the only one. As Sydney explains, and we have already teased, when Sam hassles her about the business name change, clip two.
That's what happens when you're put in charge. The name on the door changes. And you get stuck with a big pile of bills.
What are you talking about? I thought Jane was way ahead of the game.
I think I figured it out. She thinks a storefront is like from the 40s when, like, one executive,
mm-hmm.
and then there's always that scene with the guy scraping off the painted letters on
yes.
the office door and then,
yes.
you know, painting it anew. That's what she thinks business is.
Uh-huh.
Well, as usual, you're completely oblivious. Jane couldn't pay a bill on time if her life depended on it. Now, Damone Clothiers is demanding their money or they're going to stop shipment on all of our orders.
They're our chief supplier. They can't do that.
Yes, they can, and they will. Quite frankly, I don't blame them. We've got to do something fast.
Got to do something fast. Calculate. What was the name of that outfit?
Demond.
Demond. Is that a like? Is that like something from Models Inc. or something like that?
Not that I can
recall.
Is it
part of the extended 90210 Melrose universe?
No. Models Inc. is long dead by this point.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Yeah. But who is surprised Jane has learned nothing from her many past career failures and still sucks at the very basics, like can't pay a bill on time? That's the easiest part of running a business, honestly.
Can't pay a bill on time?
Anyway,
yeah.
Then Carter is there, and I had thought we were honestly on the verge of finding out his whole deal, and the reason that Walter wanted to pay Sydney to spend time with him is because he's agoraphobic and, like, never leaves his house. But apparently that's not the case. He's here at the store. So he just heard about
What's this dude's story? He just seemed to be inserted in the middle of this. I really had no... Besides the fact that I finally figured out that he is actually shares DNA with Rob Lowe.
That's
correct.
Because
some of the scenes, like, oh, yeah, now I can see it. Now that Rob Lowe's eyes are closing in, mm-hmm. with, you know, his eyes are getting smaller, he looks more like his brother here.
It's true.
I don't mean disrespectfully. I'm just saying I can see the resemblance more comparing Rob Lowe now with Chad Lowe then.
Right. Although Chad Lowe is the younger one.
Okay.
Anyway.
If you say so.
With all due respect to our listeners who know all this already, Chad Lowe plays Carter. He's like a rich guy who Walter was at an art auction. He was bidding against Sydney on a piece of art that Sam made, and then Sydney won, and then she couldn't actually pay for it because she won by mistake. So she brought it to Carter's house.
She didn't know the auction rules. She scratched her nose.
She turned around to pay attention to Kyle and Taylor canoodling, and she got distracted, and she accidentally bid more money than she had. So then she brought it over to Carter so that he could buy it off her, which he did. And so he's a rich software guy.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Carter just heard about a great new breakfast place, and he has half an hour until his next meeting. So can they go?
Wait, it was a great new breakfast place where everything is dressed up with old props from movies.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. This is already an idea that the show has had this season with Sam. And like, I'm going to go buy a vintage dress to put in the window, even though we don't sell it in our actual store. It'll just be for display purposes only. Sydney gently explains not that that's not how restaurants work, which is like, if you have a half an hour before your next meeting, you don't have time to go eat. Especially in Los Angeles.
But wouldn't you have liked to see that scene where they run to the restaurant and they basically they have 30 minutes, 10 of which waiting for their food.
Yes.
Or what, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they have to like eat in 5 minutes in order to get out of there to get back wherever they got to get because they only have half an hour for the whole transaction.
Right.
How fast are they eating whatever they ordered?
Well,
there's going to be roofs of mouths that are going to be burned.
Yes.
There's going to be lots of spillage and sloppage.
Yes.
It's going to be a mess. I kind of wanted to see that scene.
Not to mention, if you're in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. you need to leave for wherever you're going.
Yeah.
60 to 90 minutes before wherever you need to, whenever you need to be there.
Yeah.
Conservatively.
Yeah. LA's terrible that way.
It is.
Yeah. And so, many other ways, too.
It's true. Sydney gently explains she can't drop everything just because Carter happened to have 33 minutes today, but maybe later, but he should call first. And after he's gone, Sam can't believe Sydney blew him off like that, but Sydney complains that Carter treats other people like their time is not as valuable as his and starts to add the thing Walter offered in the last episode but stops mid-sentence, which, if the store is going broke, how is Sam going to afford to pay double the rent on an apartment she was formerly splitting? A. B. If the store is going broke, maybe let Walter pay you to be Carter's friend. I'm not here to tell you how to live, but it's a thought. Exactly. So then Sam goes to Kyle's to try to renegotiate her and Kyle's arrangement regarding the Kirovs and why. And instead of installments, can he give her all the money now? And his initial answer is no, but he'll move some things around. The next morning, Jake finds Allison on the couch, where she tells him about her pregnancy and completely ignoring the expression on her face, which looks ambivalent at best. He goes on and on about how happy he is, and she's like, great. He thinks they should go out for dinner and have a party, but
wait a minute. Great. And then she like holds up a tiny little pennant that says baby. Waves it around.
She would rather keep it between them for now than have a party since it's early and anything can happen. And that night, Taylor comes to Sydney's place, having been dispatched by Kyle with a check, but it's on condition that Sydney stay away from Kyle. And Sydney, amused, points out Taylor's hypocrisy in light of her whole thing with Peter, ending by saying that Sydney cannot be bought. She will get the money elsewhere and talk to Kyle whenever she wants. And Taylor thought she'd say that and is gleeful about getting to keep this money in her hand. At the store the next day, Sydney scolds Sam for sucking at her job, and Sam whines that she's only one person, and I am forever Team Sydney, as you know, but she nearly loses me forever by saying that Sam's lunch break is only 20 minutes.
Mm.
What the fuck? Unacceptable.
I mean, yeah. What if she has to go to that restaurant to eat? How's she going to do that in 20 minutes? The other people had half an hour, they're going to swing it.
That's right. Apparently, this bite is so loud that one of the extras pretending to shop hears it and makes a face, which you can see in the visual aids.
It's really, like, I tell you, that one time that we were doing a favor, kind of, for somebody,
mm-hmm.
and we're extras on a, what they call a pilot presentation, I think
yes.
they were calling it, which
mm-hmm.
is, like, kind of a pilot. But
less
not,
than a pilot.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, and we were just, like, I was in the background. And I seriously, there was, like, a big kind of fighty, shouty thing. And, like, I'm not supposed to, like, look at them and, like, do anything, like, too showy.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to acknowledge it in some way because obviously you're in a room that suddenly people started shouting.
Yeah.
So, like, what I'm saying is I really empathize with this extra. Like, I mean, you have to do something. But it always looks like, because the most you can do is this. It's like, it's happening. So you just, like, you do a head nod. Like,
uh-huh.
But you can't talk either. So
that's right.
Because they always put you with somebody else so mm-hmm. that you can play off each other so that, like, you don't look like a total loon, I guess, doing, like, crazy extra things. Anyways,
yeah.
I'm saying. It's a hard life being an extra.
It's true. There's also a scene in the upcoming season of For All Mankind where there's someone, they're in a, people are meeting, the characters we know are meeting in a restaurant with booths. And so there's obviously extras in the other nearby booths. And the guy who is behind the scene, who is, like, trying to look like he's having a conversation, does the worst conversation acting I think I've ever seen. It's not even peas and carrots level of, like, mouth movement. Anyway.
He's just doing, rah, rah.
Yes. Yeah. So look out for that. For All Mankind, good show. Bad extras. So as Sam storms over to Sydney to bitch back that it's hard to take orders from Sydney when Sydney is barely competent herself, case in point, Sam doesn't have to return some scarves to one of their suppliers, as Sydney just told her to do, because that bill has been paid, and Sydney pretends she just forgot. But then hurries over to Kyle's to thank Kyle for paying her bill, even though Taylor was such a bitch about it, and Kyle has to stop Sydney while she's in the middle of kissing him to say he doesn't know what she's talking about. By this point, Taylor has materialized behind Sydney to eavesdrop. Kyle suggests that Sydney must have a guardian angel or a sugar daddy, Taylor rudely adds, and Kyle makes noises in Sydney's defense, but Sydney must admit Taylor might be right. Elsewhere, Jake wanders into Shooters from, apparently, City Hall and is aghast to see Allison working because she should be off her feet. Dude, she is 8 weeks pregnant. Relax. But
she can scale K2 at this point. Not a problem.
Allison wants to circle back to the City Hall part, obviously, and Jake sheepishly admits he was looking into getting a marriage license. The logistics were easier than he thought. And since we, too, got married in the area 4 months after this episode aired, can confirm no blood test required. It is not a big deal.
You just need to pay for parking.
That's right. You need to get there 60 to 90 minutes ahead of time right. In order to find somewhere to park.
Or 120 minutes if you want to go for lunch.
That's right. Allison's face is a poem as she asks this, clip 3.
Is this how you propose marriage to someone? By telling him about the logistics. Jake, I'm just getting used to the idea of being pregnant. I can't even think about marriage.
Well, when are you gonna want to? The kid's gonna be here in 8 months. He's gonna want a mom and a dad and a family.
Well, and you'll have one. All I'm saying is that marriage isn't our only option.
I'm sorry. I'm just asking. Better if I didn't ask at all, right?
I don't know. I know is that I don't want to talk about this right now.
What's wrong with Allison these days? Give her a break. She's pregnant.
uh,
What's up with Allison these days?
Yeah, usually Billy is the one with a big mouth. I guess it's on the move. Not cool. Not cool, Jake. The next day, Sydney storms over to Carter's house and confronts Walter about the supplier he paid. He thinks she should consider it compensation for a job well done. She doesn't know what job he means. She's Carter's friend. But Walter says that is the job. Without her, Carter is an unproductive mess. And when she says Walter should not have done this, he's like, cool, pay me back. And she's like, well, let's not be hasty. But then states she's going to go tell Carter that Walter buys her friends. And Walter grabs her arm, drink, warning that she may not want to do that, but she proceeds. And Carter, when she sees him, says he feels bad about what happened the other day. Now he knows she doesn't like surprise visitors, and she absolves him, but clip four.
But I do really need to tell you about this.
I know. I've been taking you for granted, and that's got to change.
Nothing can change until you realize that Walter...
I don't care about Walter. I don't care about work. I care about you.
Carter, you're making this really hard.
You know what's really hard is when you told me to call you later, I tried. But I couldn't. Yeah, I was afraid that you would say that you didn't ever want to see me again. And I couldn't stand the thought of that.
Really?
Well, she's pacified, but then she sees Walter is watching and she feels weird about all of this again. At their place, Allison comes out to, it seems from her reaction and his hands motions, Jake setting the table, even though we don't see the table until 30 seconds into the scene because it's out of frame. Great job, director. Anyway.
It would have been great if you just heard things smashing. Like you see him putting, like placing something down out of frame. Just smash, smash, smash. Just buy more.
He was supposed to go back to Shooters, but this is more important. He knows his proposal sucked, but clip five.
I love you, Allison. You know that. And whether I ask you to marry me now or 10 years from now, we both know that it's going to happen.
Can't we just talk about this?
Let me finish, okay? We also both know that my marriage proposal had nothing to do with this baby. The truth is, when I made you a partner in Shooters, I was asking you to give me a lifetime commitment. I was just afraid to say the words. And I think you were afraid to hear them.
You're probably right.
Look what we have. We love each other. We trust each other. We're best friends. You can't ask for anything more, can you?
No.
Allison Parker, will you marry me?
Yes.
I mean, first of all, over his shoulder, she doesn't look so sure. And I would like to criticize this based on the fact that they've only been dating for 17 episodes, but yeah. She agreed to marry Haley after they'd known each other for like a month. So,
Haley.
I guess this tracks. Yeah, remember Haley?
Yeah.
That was one of the Riptide guys, Dave.
Oh, hang on. Joe Perry?
The other one.
Roscoe.
Perry King. Also, I don't think the first guy was named Joe Perry, was it? It's Joe Penny.
Penny, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other guy totally looks like a Roscoe, though.
Sure. Pause for ad.
We're back.
Now for our A-plot. All the doctors are in crisis while Amanda makes her move at D&D. For the second consecutive episode, we open on Michael storming into the beach house to confront Kimberly right after he takes off his new wedding ring. And I'm gratified to see that Kimberly has decided to embrace couch life, which you see in the visual aids. I have not felt so close to her since she got Michael to lick guacamole off her finger. But anyway... Michael demands to know why Kimberly didn't tell him about her tumor, and she is so shocked that she doesn't have a lie at the ready, deciding just to say it's not that serious. It's not also not his business, nor is it Peter's, and Michael should leave.
I mean, that's the right answer.
Yeah.
If I don't think it's your business, it's not your business.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know why she had to figure out other avenues to attack on that vector, because it was like, well, it's my brain.
Yes. I'm saying if she wanted to cover it, she, like, if she had expected this was coming, she would have had a story.
I see. Yes.
Yes. Of course, she doesn't need one, no. But she is on a soap.
Mm-hmm. True. Good point.
Only now does Michael connect that Kimberly pushed him away and insisted on a divorce because she's dying. But by this point in the scene, she's gotten over her surprise enough to laugh, of course, that she's not dying. She is going to be fine. He doesn't believe her, but he does leave, threatening on his way out to find out what is actually wrong with her. And at the hospital later, Michael and Peter snit at each other in the hall, Michael on a mission to violate Kimberly's privacy. Dr. Howard Stein refuses to cooperate, but then Peter's like, what if I asked you to break doctor-patient confidentiality?
This is the scene. All right. Dr. Howard Stein. We wanted to see x-rays and shit of Kimberly. Mm-hmm. No. Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll leave the room, but don't look in that filing cabinet, you rascals.
Yep.
It was, yeah.
But they do.
Mm-hmm. Now you got a lawsuit.
At D&D, Amanda tells Craig her office is too small for client meetings, plus it's full of a million boxes. He claims he can't do anything about it, but she suggests he blow out a wall. Literally, that's not just, oh, go blow it out your wall.
A lot of teal in this show.
Yeah, well, it's the 90s.
Yeah, I guess, but the color schemes to me seem sort of, what year is it exactly?
This is early 97.
Yeah, that seems pretty late for some of this, because, like, the interior has a lot of teal, turquoisey stuff. The exterior of the building they keep showing is sort of peachy and teal. Mm-hmm. There is a scene, either in this episode or the other episode, where one of the couples are in bed, and their sheets are, like, the purplest purple, and the headboard is, like, hunter green. There's a lot of 80s color schemes here.
Yeah.
And maybe they're just holdovers, but they feel sort of, like, I feel like they would have been dated by 97.
Well, I mean, the show started in 92.
Mm, okay.
So.
Right. Just stuck in a rut.
I guess. Mm. People don't usually redecorate midway through a show because the audience right. needs to know where they are.
Sure. That's a good point, Tara.
Thank you, Tara.
Billy tries to back Amanda up, but Craig, like the rest of us, doesn't care what Billy thinks. And when Amanda presses her point, he accuses her of blackmailing him with what he told her about his grandfather's death, which she denies. So he says he'll see what he can do. Oh, also, she wants all her old accounts back, plus a percentage of any new business she generates. Over to Megan and her pink crushed velvet top. They are trying and failing to get Kimberly on the phone when Michael comes home, announcing that he went to see Kimberly earlier. She is fragile, so they should keep their marriage quiet for now. Kimberly only has a few weeks left to live, and Michael wants to spend them with her because he couldn't live with the guilt if he didn't. And Megan seems like she's going to go along with it until Michael starts trying to take her engagement ring off her finger. And she's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
But also, like, unannounced. Like, yeah. He's not like, it would be a good idea to take off your ring.
Yeah.
It's just like, grab, grab, grab.
Yes. He just goes for it. Yeah. Promising he'll put it back on soon. Really?
Yeah, it was a weird scene.
Yeah, well, he's a weird guy.
Okay.
The next morning, Michael returns to the beach house against Kimberly's wishes, telling her what he knows and insisting that she admit that she needs him. And she won't, but he still refuses to let her die alone. So she suddenly says she thinks maybe they should be together, but she has some things to do. So could he come back later? Oh, sure. He has errands too. So that's fine. Also strange.
Yeah. Is Michael Mancini supposed to be kind of dumb? I know he's a doctor, but yeah. Like, he seems like kind of a doofus.
He's supposed to be cunning. No, Billy is the dumb one.
Okay.
Michael's supposed to be like a con artist.
Obviously, she's planning either to just not be there or, you know, something more definitive.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could have picked up on that, given everything he now knows.
Yeah. Well, he thinks he's smarter than others. I guess he still thinks that even though he has known Kimberly for several years and she is just as cunning as he is.
Right. That tracks.
In the hospital lounge, Peter summons Dan, even though Peter is not in charge of anything. Clip 6.
Yeah, you know, the strangest thing happened.
Matt Fielding told me that you slapped him around a couple of times.
Yeah, right. No, I think Matt is just acting like a spurned lover is all.
So you think because you two broke up, maybe he's spreading rumors about you?
Yeah, I mean, I dumped him. He's hurt. He wants to get back at me, and he's probably just launching a smear campaign against me.
Right. You know, normally I take your word for that, but... Well, Matt's a friend of mine, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. So I made a few calls and pulled a few strings, and wouldn't you know, these popped up. Personnel files from other hospitals documenting complaints about your abusive behavior.
Well, you can't believe everything you read, can you?
Well, when a friend of mine tells me his lover beats him up, well, you know how I feel about friends.
Yeah, I don't know what you're trying to do. I don't know if you're trying to rescue Fielding, if you're trying to score points with the brass, but whatever it is, stay out of my business.
Dan, we're a small community here. We all like to help each other, and I know that your rehab center thrives on the patients that we refer to it.
Don't threaten me.
It's not a threat. It's a simple reminder to get some help. Otherwise, I'll have you thrown out of here like yesterday's garbage. Understood?
Why don't you just go ahead, huh? Who needs this two-bit hospital anyway?
From my perspective, I'd say that you do.
He definitely doesn't. Like, he owns a rehab clinic. Those things fucking print money. In Los Angeles, give me a break. That's A.
Everybody in Los Angeles has problems.
They do. And B, I have to assume that Peter has decided to use his new technique of pretending people told him shit to get information out of others on Dan. Because if not, I don't know why this conversation between Peter and Matt would have happened off screen.
Mm.
They're also not that close. Like, all of this, he's my friend. Is he? Back to D&D, where everything's coming up, Amanda. Clip 7.
The contractors will be here tomorrow to expand your office.
Oh, I love that email system. What about my old accounts?
You'll be getting the 4 most lucrative ones back.
Very impressed. You're green, but you're learning. A few more years, you might actually make a great boss.
Hope this means that we're through with the fair requests.
Probably. It's always a good idea to check your email on a daily basis.
Yeah, Dave. Elevator opens its arms.
I'll have a word with you, Craig.
Don't stay up all night gabbing.
What's going on between you two?
My relationship with my employees is none of your business.
Well, you're a bigger fool than I thought you were if you're sleeping with the enemy.
Whatever gave you that idea?
Why else, Craig, would you redecorate our office and throw our extra business?
How'd you know that? Campbell, your spy?
That dimwit couldn't spy his way out of a paper bag. But rest assured, Craig, I do have my resources.
Well, I have D&D, so you and your resources, they can go to hell.
The son in this reminds me, you remember Liz Lemon lost her agent and she got a new agent and turns out he was like a cat talent agent or something like
yes.
that? This guy reminds me of him for some reason. I don't
what?
Know.
What?
Yeah. Part of it is just that he is sort of incompetent generally,
yeah.
but the other part of it is that his suit's too big.
Oh, yes, that's true. But Liz Lemon's agent is, he's the director on Better Call Saul. He's that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Over to the courtyard where Dan is once again lurking in the shadows as Matt returns home. And Dan is wasted as he accuses Matt of ruining his career and forcing Dan to hurt him. Matt is not having it. However, he does not deny talking about what actually happened. So Peter was telling the truth? Why off camera, show? Why do you make these choices? God, every fucking time. Anyway, Matt angrily tells Dan he needs help, and Dan sinks onto a planter to huff that he loved Matt, and Matt pushed him away, and then he starts to leave self-pityingly, but Matt won't let him drive drunk and drags him into Matt's apartment, dumping him on the couch. And when he reaches into Dan's pocket for his keys, clip 8.
Oh, weird tickles. I didn't know you cared. I don't.
That may be the closest the show has ever gotten to letting us know Matt might enjoy touching another man's penis,
yeah.
honestly. That's
sure.
that's the most action we've ever seen him
yeah, play. And then what's-his-nuts, doctor that's not from Dynasty earlier.
Peter.
Peter.
Yep.
Peter Burns. Mm-hmm. I was saying Burns.
Yep.
refers to him as his lover.
Yeah.
And again, like, I don't know, maybe that's just, that's as far as you can get, but like, do they actually ever use like the word boyfriend with Matt at all when he's talking about like?
I'm sure they have.
Have they?
Recall.
Okay.
Probably.
It just seems like we're still in that dancing around. Mm. You know what I mean? Like
right.
we're there, we're here, we're doing a storyline, but we're not quite like comfortable with everything yet, says Fox or whoever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's just like the place setting of it. It's still kind of stilted.
Yeah. You know? Well, Lover was more of a 90s thing.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. I think a boyfriend might have been, seemed like it was infantilizing. I don't know. Lover was definitely used more in the 90s.
Mm. Okay. But it's sort of like saying, like the thing in the 80s, it would be partner or something like that.
Right.
Maybe.
But I mean, partner's just, also back.
Yes, I realize that. What I'm saying is right. like they're both gender neutral.
Oh, I see.
So you can say it in whispered tones. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it seems like part of that sort of transitional phase in our dialogue.
I see
we're talking
what you mean.
About that kind of thing.
Yeah. Lover makes it seem like it's just sex versus boyfriend, which makes it seem like a relationship.
Yeah.
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 Back to the episode. Michael returns to the beach house with takeout. Apparently, when he angrily came over to sign the divorce papers in front of Kimberly, he never returned the key to the domicile. But anyway, she is not there. But there's a note, clip 9.
Dear Michael, you were wrong. I don't need you. I do want to die alone. Goodbye, Kimberly.
What a read.
I know. He put a lot of mustard on it.
That was great.
You can, to refer back to your angry signature from the previous episode, yeah. You can also see in the visual aids what Kimberly's or Marcia Cross's handwriting looks like, because they show the note.
Yeah. Oh, you think Marcia Cross actually wrote that note?
Yes.
Zero chance.
I bet she did.
I doubt it.
I feel like she is method enough to have done it. I bet.
That is a prop that has been in the books for a couple of weeks before the show even airs.
Any other actor just about, I don't think Heather Locklear would write that note. I believe Marcia Cross would write it herself.
Yeah.
Just a feeling I get.
Okay.
Anyway, Michael runs, but will he make it in time to the pier that Kimberly is standing on, looking down at the ocean, which there's a gif. I honestly don't think it's very far below her. When we see it, it doesn't look like a very far fall.
And it didn't look stormy, really.
No.
And it didn't look that deep.
No.
Like the, you know, the waves cresting and the foam. It was very sort of like 3 feet of water kind of situation to me. Did not look precarious.
No, it looked like it was far enough for her to fall that she like might break her ankle.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Or get wet.
Yeah, or get wet. Anyway, she climbs over the railing, but still has to psych herself up and eventually changes her mind, clinging to the railing and cursing herself as a coward.
Yeah. It's always great when characters talk to themselves when they're alone about their cowardice. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Well, she at least has had some pretty serious mental illness, so she comes by it honestly.
Okay.
The next morning, Dan convinces Matt that he is sober enough to drive. The previous night made him realize he has a problem, but it's not drugs or alcohol. His father used to hit him, too. He's not making excuses, but his dad taught him that showing love was the same as showing weakness. And to show strength, he should act like a man. And Matt thinks a man faces his fears. Dan is really sorry. Matt knows, but it's over. Matt's rejection has convinced Dan to check himself into a facility. Hey, I know one he won't have to pay for. Matt hopes it helps. Dan still loves him. Matt thinks this ending is for the best, and we never saw him again.
Oh,
that's a wrap
back
on
to the
Dan.
Bear.
Back to the bear. At Megan's.
The chimp, not the big hairy guy.
That's right. At Megan's, Michael is spinning out about not knowing where Kimberly is. Megan is also very concerned. J.K. Clipton.
Maybe she doesn't want to be found.
No.
Maybe she doesn't want to be found. Megan tries to calm Michael down, but it doesn't work. And he rushes out to drive around, I guess. And
there was so much. No time to explain. Get in the car.
Yeah.
And then, like, they cut. And obviously, they've been driving for a few minutes. And what are we doing?
Yeah.
There's no time to explain. We're in the car. Cut to, like, another 5 minutes driving. Where are we going? Slow down, she says. Like, what?
Oh, we're not even there yet.
Literally.
That's the end.
Pick a panic lane, lady.
I know. So when we see Megan next, she's at Kimberly's hotel room saying that Michael is looking for her. Kimberly called Megan there because Megan needs to plant the key to Kimberly's safe deposit box in the beach house somewhere. Michael's going to find it. And that's the last thing she's going to ask Megan to do, because the next time it rains, Kimberly's going to drive up Mulholland and go off the road in a way that looks like an accident. Mm-hmm. And as this is going on, she is holding a gigantic slice of room service lemon meringue pie, which looks good as hell, by the way. You can see it in the visual aids. I was turned on. Megan tries again to talk Kimberly out of dying by suicide, but Kimberly calls it her fate. She should have died in the other accident, which she says was 2 years ago, but the one with Michael was November 1993. It's now January 1997. I even went to the Kimberly page on a fan wiki to see if there was, like, another car accident in between those that I forgot about. Apparently not. They're just no one in the writer's room has the show Bible. Over to D&D, where Arthur finds Craig with Amanda in her office. And clip 11.
Well, isn't this cozy?
We're rather busy, Arthur, so if this is a social call...
Actually, this is a business matter involving you, Amanda. And this confidential file that you put together regarding my...
What is this accent? What is this?
It's all over the map. This actor is English, but the character apparently is not supposed to be, but he doesn't remember that all the time.
My little family problem. You told her our secret, didn't you, son?
How did you get all of that?
My computer experts downloaded it right from the server. You see, Craig, you can't trust anyone in this business. Least of all, a money-hungry woman like Amanda. Well, now I'm going to give you what you deserve. You want money? Well, now you're going to be drowning in it. Let's start the bidding, Amanda, and say, I don't know, perhaps 2 million?
Not interested.
Ah, not interested. Well, how about three? $3 million, Amanda, to keep our secret, and you'll never see us again.
Dad, stop it.
I won't consider anything less than five.
$5 million? Well, that's a good deal, isn't it? See, I told you she was a shrewd businesswoman, son.
Amanda, I can't believe you're doing this.
Frankly, I've had it with both of you. This looks like a pretty good retirement fund.
Truly, the no-brainer of all no-brainers.
Yeah.
Taking this money, honestly.
And good negotiating.
Yeah.
So from $2 to $5 million in a span of 10 seconds.
Yeah. Also, if he was willing to start at two, like, counter at 10. Come on. Anyway. Craig turns on Arthur, yelling at him for trying to buy Amanda like he buys his way out of all his other problems, and they snip back and forth at each other until Arthur's about to sign the check for Amanda, and Craig puts his hand on it, and they grab at each other, and then clip 12.
Even his grunts of pain are somehow...
Sound English?
Mid-Atlantic, yeah.
Having a heart attack.
No.
Oh, what the hell do you think you're doing? You gotta call an ambulance.
Forget it! Let him die! The way you let my grandfather die!
Help him! He's dead.
Oh my God.
Okay. Just to remind everybody, this is the second time a past D&D boss has had a heart attack in front of Amanda. Like, this is not a job that has a lot of longevity.
Well, you know, go with what works,
I guess. Well, Craig falls apart. Amanda calls 911. And the next night, she checks in on Craig at Field Manor. He is pretty sure she's not there out of concern for him, but to make sure he's not going to go public about the murder or how Arthur died. Craig didn't talk to anyone today since he was too busy picking out Arthur's coffin. Amanda knows that Arthur was family, but he was evil. And Craig needs to move on. And Craig thinks that she is as heartless as Arthur was, but clip 13.
I learned my lesson the hard way. My father was a carbon copy of yours. He was a shark who ate anybody who got in his way, including me. So when it comes to feeling guilty about the death of uncaring fathers, believe me, I wrote the book. Don't waste your time grieving. You're not worth it.
Again, what is with the dad content all of a sudden? Like, if this was a parallel they wanted to draw between these two characters, they could have done it a long time ago. This feels like it's out of nowhere.
Maybe it was near Father's Day when this episode came out.
It was in January.
Well,
so you are mistaken.
We celebrate our fathers every month of the year.
Back to the Malibu Cove Hotel, where Kimberly looks up from her book to a weather report about heavy rain. That's her cue.
Yay! Now's my chance to kill myself.
That's right. So Megan is asleep on the couch of the beach house when Michael returns. She realizes it's been raining and drags him out with her panicking. This is the scene that Dave was alluding to earlier.
Scenes cross, or my timetable cross, but boy, that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, he won't start the car until she tells him what's happening. And she's like, no, start it. He's like, okay.
Okay.
So dumb. Anyway, she does actually tell him everything, ending on Kimberly's plan for that night. And yeah. Michael is in such a state that Megan has to tell him to slow down, which he ignores. And sure enough, their car drives right into Kimberly's and ends the episode upside down. And
but like, not like horrific car crash.
No,
it was just sort of
fine.
Like, oh, oops, we're upside down. It's going to be embarrassing to get out of this car,
right?
Sort of accident energy. Like,
yes.
It did not seem like a crash. It seemed like an accident.
Yes, it's the car is as damaged as a car can be when it might have to do another take.
Yeah, it's
which
exactly how
the situation.
It. Yep.
All right, let's close it up. Starting with our MVP, Dave.
Let's see who was the best in this episode. I am probably gonna let you go first while I think about it a little more.
Well, boy, I guess it's gotta be Matt. He got rid of Dan once and for all. Despite Dan being very hot and tall.
Yeah.
He's a bad man.
And I mean,
Matt,
I don't know if this
is
his
guns.
I don't know if this is exactly in the spirit of most valuable player.
Sure.
In universe, definitely not the most valuable player. But for me, I really enjoyed Arthur Fields, Daddy Fields, all over the place accent.
Uh-huh.
It was sort of a moment in joy outside of what the show was actually trying to do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give most valuable player to whatever the hell was going on with that guy's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Mm-hmm. Least valuable player.
I mean, I'm going to go with Michael Mancini on this one. He just seems really a little too dumb for somebody that managed to become a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's like emotional intelligence and intelligence, but come on. Like, you got to pick up on what's going on here with your ex-wife.
Well, especially since it's Kimberly, like their entire marriage was just scheming. He should know what she is capable of, whether she has a brain tumor or not.
Actually, I have another least valuable player. Well, actually, you go first in case it's a duplication. It won't be.
Well, I'm going to say Allison, because if you still have not decided if you're going to carry to term the pregnancy that is the obvious impetus for your boyfriend proposing marriage, don't say yes.
Mm-hmm. That's just good advice. My second least valuable player is the confusing pile of cushions at the seaside, whatever that was, beach house.
Oh, yes.
It was just on the floor, haphazard pile, but not like sitting cushions, just like throw cushions in a pile on the floor, and little ziggurat of impromptu comfort.
Are you looking at the visual aids?
No.
Oh, well, there's a picture of them. So, listener, you can see this haphazard pile for yourself. I forgot one of my other most valuable players is David T. Cole leaping into the fray in Sarah's absence to help us out with these two past episodes. Dave, thank you so much.
Oh, that's a crock.
Next time!
Yeah.
I forgot it's me. Nick's old army buddy comes to town to ruin Taylor's life. Sydney gets out of town with Carter before Walter lets her in on why he's been so anxious for her to spend time with his boss. And Michael crashes his car again because, you know, he just loves to do it. And
wait,
Dave,
he crashes the car again? Like two episodes in a row?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, what actually happens is the aftermath from the car crash, which is he hallucinates that Megan is an angel trying to beckon him to her, and Kimberly is a devil wanting him to go to hell.
Oh, my God. How come that episode wasn't this episode?
Yeah, well, maybe Sarah will be, she'll be sick in 2 weeks and you'll
hoping.
Be back.
Here's
who's
hoping.
To say?
Hey, Sarah, don't,
Sarah,
you know, yeah.
Get well soon.
Lick whatever you want.
We love you.
Sarah, you're doing great. Just great.
You Listener can find out more of what you love, if what you love is us, at our website, againwiththis90210.com. We link you straight to the visual aids we do for every episode, and we make it easy for you to order a very special 90210 book, which Sarah and I co-wrote. If you want even more of us than that in your life, go to patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you 4 big bonus episodes every month. We hope to see you there. Thank you for listening, and Dave, thank you again for pitching in.
You're welcome.
What's going on over there?